Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Listeners, today on this National Politics Podcast, we're going to talk about a local election that has national implications. It's the New York City mayoral primary, and we're including it here because this election will be the biggest test so far of a new way of conducting elections. It's called ranked choice voting. Some other places around the country do already have it, but if it makes it in New York, it might make it anywhere, as the song goes. So as the nation grapples with the dueling issues of actual voter suppression and trumped-up calls for election security, taking a short look at some alternatives to how we hold elections is pretty interesting right now. So here's that conversation. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, June 22nd. With me for a few minutes now is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of the Good Government Group Common Cause New York. She's been out in Brooklyn this morning and is a big proponent of ranked choice voting. Hey, Susan, thanks for a few Election Day minutes. Welcome back to WNYC.
Always happy to speak with you, Brian.
And your group has been a proponent of ranked choice voting. Do you think it's affecting this election for the better from what you can tell so far?
Well, we've been out and about, and voters are telling us that ranked choice voting is simple and easy to use. And some voters have told us that they've been more engaged because they have researched the candidates in order to rank them.
To play devil's advocate, under the old system, what we might see tonight is, let's say, Eric Adams first and Catherine Garcia second, for example, if it follows the recent polls, and neither of them gets more than 40% of the vote. So the top two finishers have a runoff election, one-on-one, over the next few weeks. What's so bad about that we needed to scrap it for this complicated ranked choice voting system?
Well, it's not a complicated ranked choice voting system. It's very straightforward from the voter's point of view when they go to fill in their ballot. The thing about the runoffs are that they are very expensive. They decrease turnout. The people who actually come out to vote in a runoff, it's a much smaller number of voters, and it tends to skew whiter and older. So what we have with ranked choice voting is an instant runoff system, so you don't see that drop off.
And talk to me about Garcia and Yang co-campaigning the last few days in the context of ranked choice voting as you know it from past experiences in other states. What are they actually trying to do as a matter of strategy and as a matter of ranked choice voting math?
So ranked choice voting is a system that encourages candidates to collaborate and form alliances in order to better educate voters. It's a perfectly legitimate strategy that we see across the country with ranked choice voting, and it's a positive development, not anything negative or untoward. It's used extensively, and it's a good thing from the voters' point of view.
And so as a matter of math, how does that potentially make it harder for Eric Adams to win, which seems to be the point because he was in the lead? So there's a mathematical strategy here for Yang and Garcia to team up for one or the other, presumably to prevail. But I think it's not clear to people why that would actually work, especially if people were splitting up their first choice votes between Yang and Garcia.
So from the voters' point of view, again, this is more information to the voters, and there is no one guaranteed strategy to somehow or other game ranked choice voting. This is reaching out to the maximum number of voters and providing them with the choices. It's up to the voters at the end of the day to choose who they want to rank and how they rank them.
All right. Susan, can you walk us through the timeline of how the votes will be counted and reported? I think people will be really interested in this, and they're just getting their minds around, after voting, what's going to happen then. So starting with tonight, what will we know tonight?
Tonight, we will know all of the first choice votes, as if it were an old-fashioned first past the post election. What we won't have will be any of the rankings, because there's too much data to quickly transmit to a central location to run any incomplete rounds. And what we'll see tonight will be the first choices from all of the voters who voted in person. That's early voting and in election day today. In a week, when the Board of Elections has collected all of the machines back and is able to remove the unofficial thumb drives and aggregate all of the rankings for only the in-person votes, then they'll run the ranked choice voting rounds on that incomplete number of votes and will release an unofficial incomplete set of rounds. A week later, when they've added in some, but not all, of the absentee ballots, they will run another set of incomplete, unofficial rounds. And if they haven't started the official count in another week, they'll again run the rounds on as many votes as they have. It won't be the complete count. Somewhere in July, when they have tallied all of the eligible absentee votes, they will be able to run the complete rounds and certify the winner.
Why does it take that long to tally the absentee votes? They have to be postmarked by today. They have to be received by a week from today, June 29th. And yet you're saying it's not going to be till the week of July 12th that they probably counted all the rankings on the absentee ballots. Why does it take that long?
Well, for two reasons. And remember, Brian, this is a requirement of state law. This is not anything which New York City or ranked choice voting requires. These are protections that are built into state law to be sure that only eligible votes are counted and that no absentee voter is unduly disenfranchised. So first, there's a 7-day grace period to receive the absentee ballots so that no vote is discounted because of a delay in the postal service, and then there is a 7-business-day cure period. So if the voter makes a curable mistake on their absentee ballot oath envelope, that's the inner envelope that they have to sign, date, and seal with their absentee ballot inside, the Board of Elections gives them notice, hey, you made an error that you could fix. And then they have 7 business days, which gets us into July. And you have to get past the July 4th holiday. And therefore, that time period ends on July 9th, which is a Friday. So the count's not going to start at the beginning of a weekend. And then we're at July 12th. Now, if voters respond and cure their ballots quicker, then I'm sure the count will start earlier.
So as one little sidelight, after being here to cover this mayoral race almost every day since January and knowing that primary day was June 22nd, I scheduled my vacation for the week of July 12th. So it sounds like after all of this coverage, I'm not going to be here when we actually know who won the mayoral primary. So it goes. But last thing, how does the turnout look to you so far, based on the early and the mail-in votes? Did ranked choice or did moving the primary from September to June work to engage people more, as far as you could tell so far?
Well, it's been relatively quiet. We seem to be, it's very hard to tell until we see the actual numbers of how many people came out to vote. You know, there's so many different factors that influence turnout that it's hard to say one thing or another did or didn't improve turnout. It's been relatively quiet.
Susan Lerner, who leads the New York State chapter of the Good Government Group, Common Cause, thank you so much for giving us all this context for what's going on today, Susan. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
And Sam in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Brian, and thanks for all the information you've provided since you said January, though it feels like a lot longer, this campaign.
Right. And thank you very much for that. So I see you're calling partly about a city council race. You want to start with mayor, though?
Sure. I had a list of the 5 I liked the most sort of all along over the last couple of months, but really it came down to just this past weekend when I finally locked in the positions of all five. I ended up putting Maya Wiley as number one, ranked. I was careful to rank the people I didn't, to not rank the people I didn't like, and rank the more tolerable candidates, you know, lower down in the four and five spot.
Who'd you put number two?
Number two, I put Diane Morales.
So you were sort of ideologically consistent with your top two, leaning into
and
the most
Stringer
progressive.
Three.
Uh-huh.
And Stringer at three. I had Stringer higher at one point. I guess part of what makes ranked choice interesting to me is that you can kind of do an aspirational vote. And, you know, I really like Morales. As a candidate, I also think she's unlikely to win, just, you know, in my mind. But it's nice to be able to give someone who I really like a vote, and know that the three spot for Scott Stringer is still a good vote for him.
And if you voted for the most progressive candidates, one, two, and three, how much of that was because of the police reform issue per se, or more like a group, a collection of issues?
A collection of issues, certainly. I think that Scott Stringer, to start with, he's been a progressive for a long time. You know, this term progressive is much more in vogue now. And I think Scott's someone who's been doing it for, you know, all of his career. And what I was most interested in about Scott was his experience, because I think experience, even more than, you know, a friend of mine said to me, talk to me about your experience first and your ideology second. And I think that's an interesting way to look at this election. And Scott Stringer has both of those. And I think that, you know, when it comes down to my personal values, that, you know, I really like Maya Wiley's take on things like the NYPD, but more than just that. And I think that she is experienced enough in the pool of candidates to do a good job.
Sam, thank you very much for your call. We really appreciate it. And David in Bayside, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I live in Bayside. I'm a parent, so also part of my decision. And I want to make a point that I think is really, really important, and I'm so happy to make this point on behalf of middle-class families in New York City. My first choice was Yang. My second choice was Eric Adams. There is a sense among a lot of middle-class families in Queens that progressive politics is not for them. It's not pro-middle-class families. I have never seen so many for sale signs in our neighborhoods. And when you speak to these people out here, and these are multiracial, multi-ethnic families of all backgrounds, hardworking families with children, there is a sense that after two terms of de Blasio, that the city is not for them anymore. They want to move to Long Island. They want to move to New Jersey, Westchester. And their feeling is that when it comes to public safety, education, quality of life, that we are being left out, and that there has been this almost radicalization of our city that does not really take us into account anymore. Criminals, people that want to do bad things are emboldened by progressive politics. They feel like they can get a free pass. They hear stories of defund the police, closing down of jails. We want a mayor that is going to rebuild the relationship with the police department of the city that really is one of the most important things we have to keep our streets safe and keep crime down. So it's just an interesting point that progressive politics has become such a buzzword in a positive sense, but there's a lot of people in the city that I feel like are not being heard. Multiracial families, ethnic families, not necessarily, this isn't a rich poor thing. This is families that just are hardworking people with children that want the best for them that feel like they're being left out.
And now certainly the people on, you know, the progressive side of the ledger who would identify with that label would say they are progressive on behalf of the people who they felt have been left out for so long in terms of income inequality the outcome of education and the public school system, policing that wound up in mass incarceration, you know, all those things. So not that we can have that big, big conversation in the context of the primary day exit poll, but that's what they would say on their side.
It's a philosophical discussion, and it's very much there are problems that need to be addressed with homelessness and poverty and mass incarceration, but also we don't really hear much about the middle class from these candidates, and we are a huge part of the city, and we are an important part of the city. And as Biden said when he was running and got the nomination over Bernie Sanders, you know, we don't want somebody to come in and make a revolution. We just want somebody to make our lives better.
Yeah.
And he ended up being successful. So it's interesting to think about.
And yet you consider yourself a Democrat, not a Republican, it sounds like.
100%, 100% Democrat, hardworking Democrat, pro-family, pro-education, loves this city, doesn't want to move. But I want a mayor that is going to be somebody for all people, not just our hardcore progressives.
Are you tempted to vote Republican in any context with considering who you said left out? Because that would be their line, too.
Yeah, I'm not considering Republican. I am a tried and true Democrat, but I want the right Democrat in there. And I feel like everything I've heard, it's Andrew Yang and Eric Adams, and I'm also obviously very interested in Catherine Garcia. She had a lot of great ideas, but I want to stay away from a radical candidate who I feel like is going to drive more of the middle class out of New York City.
So you ranked Yang first and Adams second?
Yes, I did, and Garcia third.
And how'd you choose, even between them, why Yang over Adams over Garcia?
Well, interesting. I feel like Adams probably has the best chance of winning. But I do love the energy of Yang and the vibrancy. And I feel like New York City there's a great renaissance coming with the, you know, pandemic coming to an end. I liked his ideas. I feel like Yang would bring a fresh new approach to governing in New York City. But I would also be thrilled to have Eric Adams as well.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.